Welcome to a new episode of Outside the Panels with your host, Johnny the Machine Hughes.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Outside the Panels. I am your host, Johnny the Machine Hughes, and hopefully, as you can tell from my really cool background, I am talking to one of my favorite writers of the last 12 months on possibly, for me, the best Marvel book that's been out. Consistently fun, consistently energetic, tongue-in-cheek, whatever you want. If you're sick of event books, this is where you should be going. I am, of course, talking about The Black Cat, and therefore, let me introduce you to Jed McKay. Jed, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
You are more than welcome. I am such a huge fan. We do another show called No Price Podcast, and every week that goes out, I keep saying, you know, people should be reading Black Cat. None of this Empire stuff. Stick to Black Cat. That's where the fun is. So, well done.
Well, I mean, I'll certainly not tell people not to read Empire, but I'm glad you're enjoying Black Cat for sure.
All right, let's start at the top and work our way down. Sure. How did you break into comics? How did you get into this wonderful field?
It's a question I answer a lot. So if anyone does know me, then I apologize for telling the story again. But it kind of was an overnight success that was about a decade in the making. I did Spider-Geddon number one. Uh-huh. As the Hobie Brown punk Spider-Man character. I did the full issue with that. And from there, I moved. I was given the job to do Daughters of the Dragon. So I did the Daughters mm-hmm. of the Dragon digital first series. And then from there, I got Man Without Fear. And then from Man Without Fear came Black Cat. And then that's kind of where we're rolling through now, which for a period of time, it's kind of just kind of seemed like my name sort of came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden I was just kind of getting a pretty steady stream of books. Uh-huh. That said, my first Marvel work was about, I wrote it about 10 years ago next month.
All right. So, what was that? Yeah. Let's get the speculators on this. Jed McKay's first work was?
It was X-Men Serve and Protect number 4. It was one of the anthology books. So my friend Sheldon Bella and I, we used to make a bunch of comics together when we were younger. He's a spectacular artist out of Australia. He got sort of headhunted in to do this X-Men Serve and Protect story, which the whole concept of the series was an X-Men character, uh-huh. a non-X-Men character teaming up to do something over 8 pages.
Okay.
Sheldon didn't know anything about the character, so he's like, well, why don't you come in and write this and we'll work together, get the band back together, and we'll both get paid. And so we did that. We did a Dazzler and the Daughters of the Dragon roller disco story. It was a lot of fun. Sorry?
Was Dazzler in it?
Yes, it was Dazzler and Daughters.
I was going to say, you can't have a roller disco without Dazzler. That's like...
No, certainly not. I mean, that's leaving money on the table.
That's low-hanging fruit, isn't it? Disco.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. I love Dazzler. I think she's class.
Oh, yeah. So we did that in like 2010, and then basically nothing for about 4 years. Then Nick Lowe, who was our editor on that, came back, said, well, we were doing another anthology series, the first Spider-Verse series. Uh-huh. And we've got these different characters. We want to give them a backstory, flesh them out a bit. You guys want to do 8 pages on this this punk Spider-Man character? So we said, yeah, absolutely, totally. And we did that for Spider-Verse number 2, which I think it was out in 2014 or I wrote it in 2014. I think I wrote it in 2014. It was out in 2015.
Cool.
And so that was 8 pages, and it was pretty well received. People really liked the character. I mean, Sheldon's art was amazing. I'm like, okay, let's see if we surely this is it. Surely we're going to get some more work.
Surely I can write more than 8 pages.
Yeah, exactly. And then just nothing for another 4 years. Oh, yeah. And then Nick came back to us again. He's like, hey, do you guys want to do a full issue with this Hobie Brown Spider-Man? And Sheldon couldn't do it, unfortunately, based on his schedule. But I was like, yeah, for sure. I'll do, first time doing a 20-page issue, mm-hmm. Full issue. And so, yeah, we did that. And then And then, as I said before, from there, I got to jump in on Daughters of the Dragon because they needed someone to sort of fill in for whoever was supposed to be doing it. But then it just didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And so they needed someone to kind of like jump in immediately and do it. And I wrote that series and people seemed to like it. Mm-hmm. And then just kind of been following that ever since.
Cool. Excellent. Well done. So you've worked in Spider-Verse and Spider-Geddon. What did you think of the cartoon in the Spider-Verse? Was that a big...
It was spectacular. Was honestly, it was something that when it was first announced, I was just kind of like, oh yeah, I'm sure that'll be fine. I'm not as interested in adaptations as most, not most, you know, as a lot of people are. I like comic books, you know, and like comic books are what I'm most interested in. And then when I finally got around to watching it, cause I was like, well, I'm going to do some of this, Spider-Verse work. I was working the another series called Spider-Verse, the one with Miles Morales. It was another anthology about different artists and writers each issue. I was like, well, I should probably watch the Spider-Verse movie. And yeah, it was fantastic. I was a little embarrassed that I had been ignoring it for so long.
Yeah, it's I love animation. I don't get the whole the internet, the whole Twitter thing, when people say, right, we've got to adapt this story. I can't wait to see this in cartoon form. And my head's like bashed against things, like saying, dude, just this is the comic book. Read the comic. Give me new animation. Give me a new story. Give me something different.
If this was people like, that's totally fine. It's just not, it's not really my priority. That is what it is for sure.
Yeah. So Black Cat. Would you say Black Cat's your biggest hit so far?
Black Cat has been, I think, a lot more successful than I had expected, certainly. It's probably been more successful than I could even hope.
Yeah.
I talk a lot about this, or I was talking a lot about this back when I think issue 10 came out, that when we were first kind of talking about doing a Black Cat series. You're a comic guy. You know that these series without, you know, your A-list characters generally have a pretty limited lifespan.
They do.
There's that dreaded 5 or 6 issue mountain you have to climb where it could be canceled before then. So when we were talking about it, you know, I'd ask Nick and say, well, what should we plan on here? Like how many issues do you think we're going to get? Because, you know, you want to plan out a story and hopefully have a satisfying resolution. And we're like, well, we'll hope for 10. And if we have to wrap it up in 10, then, you know, that would pretty much be a job well done. Okay. So like my biggest goal was to get those 10 issues and like not get canceled at 5.
Yeah.
But then we blew past that.
With style.
Balled out last month. Mm-hmm. And then we've got, the new number one coming in December. And then we've got plenty more planned from there. So I can't entirely say for sure how much further it will go, but I'm certainly, because I mean, again, cancellations being cancellations, but certainly just shooting for the moon at this point.
Cool. I suppose the frame of the story, because it's a heist book for the longest part. I suppose the frame of the framework of the story allows for either contraction or extension.
Yeah, for sure. Because I had originally planned the thing to wrap up in 10 issues, and it would have been tight. Uh-huh. But getting that extension means we're able to flesh it out more. We almost all our arcs are like 2-issue arcs within the larger larger framework of the story. And so, you know, for instance, the Wolverine Madripoor story was a later edition.
Yeah,
because all of a sudden we had the space to do it, and which was great, because I mean that was a huge couple of issues at Chris Anka on that.
I love Madripoor. It is one of my favorite places in the Marvel universe.
It's great, isn't it? Yeah,
class. He put Deadpool in there, and I was like, I hate Deadpool. I was like, if there's any character that turns me off quicker than, I don't know, it's Deadpool. And you put him in there, I was like, Yeah, but it still works. Fair enough. I'll let you off on that one. So
yeah, that's something that I think I caught a bit of criticism off that. People are like, man, you put Deadpool in this issue for like no real reason. I'm like, it just sort of fit.
Yeah,
when I was writing it, I'm like, yeah, you know, this can work. And I don't feel too, what's the word, too, you know, sort of cheesy about it, yeah, where I'm like, yeah. I think it's okay. But also that's is the Wolverine crossover issue. So you got to get all like your big crossover star characters in there.
I have to say, I love the whole book. There's not a single issue of this series that I don't like. All right. So I'll put that up there already. All right. So that's where I'm at. That's where I'm pitching. But the one that surprised me the most was the conclusion of the first part of the Iron Man story. Because I'd said not so long ago, every time you see Tony Stark, somebody else ends up in an Iron Man suit. Right. And the week before, Black Widow was out in space in Avengers and ended up in an Iron Man suit because she's in space. And I was like, why is it? I was really probably kicking off. I was like, why is it every time somebody's in an Iron Man suit? What's going on? And then you pull that switcheroo at the end of that issue. And I was like, you know what? I don't even mind. I did not see it coming, even though I was kind of like, you know, I read that many comic books. I should have like, the penny should have dropped, but I just didn't see it. And then, of course, the twist after that. Yeah, so I tipped my hat.
You must have a pretty strict internet hygiene then, because I think the solicits were pretty explicit with that great scan cover of the Iron Cat suit were all over the place before I think that issue came out.
I tend to avoid solicits. I only look for solicits when I'm going to the comic book store, so I know what to expect to pick up. And I don't even I don't read the description. I'm like, right, so Batman's in, Detective's in, Black Cat's in, da, 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 da. And when I'm picking books to review, because I review for Comic Crusaders, so we get the books early. So it's a case of I let them know, right, I'd like to read this book, and this book, and then send me what. And then, so I tend not to dive
into reviews
and stuff like that, because I don't want to be. It frustrates me when I read a book and I have to review it, like Black Cat, and then I know I'm going to the comic book store to buy it anyway. It feels like not that I've wasted my money, but I've come away thinking, oh, I've spent $4 on this book, and now I know what's happened because I've already read it last week, and it goes back in the collection straight away. You know, it's not, you know what I'm saying? Reading previews to find out what happens 3 months down the line, then seeing the book on a review, then reading it, that would just...
It's just a bridge too far.
Poof. No, I'd stay out of it. All right.
Cool. That makes me happy because I wrote that. I'm like, man, this is gonna be a great like last page punch. And then like, you know, obviously with promo being what it is, it's very hard to put surprises in comics anymore. So the fact that you were surprised by that, I'm really happy to hear that.
I was really surprised. It was good. Well, job well done. And then of course the twist, which is the book's out now, so we can talk about it. The twist is very Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3. And again, I didn't see that coming. I was just like, all right, so she's in the suit, and that's it. And I was just, yeah, she's in the suit. Yeah, cool. Obviously, she's in. What? She's not in the suit? What? And I was like, okay. So well done. Switcheroos all around.
We put them where we can.
It works. What's it like? Because you've worked on some big characters, obviously Spider-Man and Spider-Geddon and the different variants of that. Then you've worked on Daredevil. How different is it working on something like Black Cat, who is a B-C-list character by, I think, everyone's estimation, or she should be going up by now, versus someone like Daredevil, where you've got like all the Frank Miller history and you've got the Elektra history and you've got the Bullseye stuff and all that sort of stuff going on. So how's that different?
It's in one respect, it's very freeing in that there's a lot less baggage associated with the character. Mm-hmm. Like for instance, writing Daredevil, there's a lot of pressure to get Daredevil. You know, no one's looking for a reinvention or an updating on Daredevil. I mean, I'm sure they are to a certain extent, but certainly not in Man Without Fear. You know, it's a bridging miniseries. So there's a lot of pressure to present the character as what the reader wants and expects to a certain degree. And, you know, it's very exciting working with these big name characters, but then working with a character of, you know, sort of lower on the prestige totem pole, like Felicia, I find it's very freeing in that there's a lot more room for me and, you know, the artists that I'm working with to, I don't want to say put our own interpretation, but certainly there's more room, I feel, to work in there.
Yeah, yeah. Multiple room.
I mean, yeah, exactly. You know, Black Cat is a character who's been a lot of different things over a long period of time. Like if you go back and read her first appearances, she's obviously a very different character in the, you know, the '80s compared to now.
Definitely.
Part of that is the role she serves in the story. And part of that is what we, is there a difference in expectations for characters and leading characters, especially female characters. So I felt there's just a lot of, there's a lot of room to work in there. And a lot of room to sort of develop a personality that is unique to the character. And obviously it's not going to work for everybody. And that's the sort of the downside of working with a character who's never had their own series, is that especially now with the internet, you have people who are fans of every character, not every character in a whole, but you get groups of people who are fans of, you know, Black Cat. Yeah, groups of characters who are fans of Tigra, you know, various characters who
Pete.
Have not. Yeah, Pace Pot P, sure. I don't know if there's a lot of, like, Let's Talk Trapster Twitter accounts out there, but, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. You know, for a while there, my Twitter was basically like, Let's Talk Ulysses Bloodstone. But you know, fans will have different expectations of what they think a series with their favorite character should look like. That favorite character not having had a series in, I mean, quite some time, then there's going to be wildly differing opinions on how it should go. You know, when this Black Cat series came out, some people, you know, a lot of people really liked it. Some people who are long-term Black Cat fans did not, because it's not adhering to, you know, what they would like to see with the character. And that's fine, you know. People are going to have their different opinions. They don't have to like everything. But I find that that's something that is you're going to see more with a character who's had lower exposure than someone like, you know, for instance, Daredevil. Because generally speaking, with a Daredevil series, you have a pretty set idea of what you're going to get. Whereas with, you know, Black Cat, it's just going to be a really sultry femme fatale kind of thing. Is it going to be, you know, is after Spider-Man? Are you going to do a Robin Hood thing? You can go back to the private detective roots, this, that, or the other. So yeah, it's a bit of both. I sum it up in a pretty unsatisfactory manner.
I get it. I think you're absolutely right. I totally agree that when you work on Daredevil, there's certain beats you've got to hit. When you work on something like Black Cat, it's all up in the air. You don't have to go one, two, three, four.
You know?
Yeah, you can go 1, 3, 4, 2 if you wanted to. Your thing. Right, we're going to have to get to that question, the question that everybody, you must be sick of answering, so I'm sorry if you get this a lot, but Black Cat on one hand, Catwoman on the other.
I mean, there's no comparison to Black Cat.
So how are the two different? This is the thing. I answered this recently someone asked me on my Twitter, and I said, well, for me, Black Cat's more flirty and fun. She's more about the kind of fun element, whereas Catwoman, especially recently, seems a little bit stoic and a little bit, she's lost a pizzazz a little bit. And, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I like Bat and Cat together. Knock yourselves out with that. But if I'm looking for something that's fun and wants to put a smile on my face, I'm reading Black Cat. So, Gia, what's the comparison? What's the differences for you?
I think most recently the biggest difference is that Catwoman has a much better writer.
Bear in mind, I'm a comic guy, right? So are we talking Joel Jones writing or are we talking Ram V writing? Because
I haven't read them previously. It's just you know, Ram V really hit with a real bang yesterday. So
Ram V, I've interviewed him on this show before, and I've read the Savage Shores. great book. If you like indie books, go get it because it's fantastic.
Yeah, that's, I haven't read it. It's one that's been on my list for ages and just never got around to it. But yeah, I mean, from what I've seen of his Catwoman, looks spectacular. But as far as the difference between the characters, I mean, I think you generally sort of hit the nail on the head there in that Black Cat is very much a Marvel New York character, whereas Catwoman is very much a DC Gotham character, and you're going to have wildly different areas of tone there, considering that they are very similar. You set a story in Gotham, you set a story in Marvel's New York, they're extremely different stories. Black Cat generally, at least in the series that I've been working on, is a little more madcap. It's fun. Like, a lot of the inspiration comes from these sort of thief caper stories, whether they be like, you know, like 1960s stuff, like The Italian Job, or like Luke the Third, or any iteration of Ocean's 11, where it's about stealing things, but it's about stealing things and having fun doing it and looking great doing it. And I think that's basically as kind of succinct I can get in that.
Okay, cool. Excellent. That's a good answer. I like that. It's interesting when we talk about it because I'm a comic guy. I remember the Chuck Dixon, Jim Ballant Catwoman from the what's that? Late 80s, early 90s. You know what? My pile of my B's and C's in my comic collection are just over there. So if you know, and back then Catwoman was a little bit fun. She was definitely a lot more fun than she is now. But
sure, I mean, I'm speaking on more recent iterations of characters.
And that's the way it goes. Because I mean, you're absolutely right. Felicia's gone through her changes. She's been part-time lover because she fancies Spider-Man but not Peter Parker. She's been a thorn in the side of the marriage between MJ and Peter. She dated Flash Thompson. She's been a crime lord.
She's run the gamut.
Totally. Excellent. Okay, right, as we continue, we're going to take a quick break so you can hear one of our adverts. This is an advert for the up-and-coming virtual con Comic Crusaders on October the 24th. Have a listen, get your times down so you can listen in. There you go.
Coming soon on October 24th, 2020, Comic Crusaders presents Virtual Con 2, only on ComicCrusaders.com.
Welcome back to Outside the Panels with me, Johnny the Machine Hughes, and Jed McKay, writer of the Black Cat book. Right, excellent. So, I've got to ask the question, what sort of writer are you? Are you a full script kind of guy, or are you a Marvel, the Marvel way that everyone talks about? Or does it depend on the artist you work with?
I mean, largely, I don't know if anybody does the quote unquote Marvel method. I mean, certainly not at my level. If you're looking at someone who's more, more established or a bigger name, I suppose they can kind of do what they want. But no, I mean, it's full script, panel by panel. I tend to be perhaps less descriptive in my panels than others do, and perhaps than I should be, largely because almost every time I describe something, the artist, being much better at it than I am, turns in a much more interesting version of it than what I've written down. So for a lot of stuff, things like angles, for instance, unless like the point of view or the angle is specifically important to the shot, it's just not something I generally really describe. These artists are professionals, and they're certainly much better at the sort of thing than I am. So I tend to write perhaps a little looser than possibly I should. But beyond that, it's page by page, panel by panel, caption by caption.
Cool. You have restored my faith. Well done. So Marvel are really great at putting out some really strong female-led books. You talked about the cancellation chain. So you've got things like Mockingbird from a few years back by Chelsea Kane, which was a fantastic book. You've got Spider-Woman back on the shelves now after a hiatus. The Dennis Hopeless book was again really good. You've got the Invisible Woman miniseries that came out last year, and now you've got Black Cat. What is it about Marvel that they get them female lead characters so well? And for yourself as well, because obviously you worked with Daughters of Dragon as well as Felicia.
I think part of it is just they've got such a great back catalog of female characters. It's hard to think of, you know, a group of female characters of such range, of such variety than what Marvel has, to the point where, you know, there's always room for more. There's always, you know, why don't we have a series with this character or that character or the other? But people are there for it. People are excited about it. You know, the demand and the fandom, I think, is there for these characters. Like Spider-Woman came out huge with, Carla Pacheco was writing it.
Yep.
It was the number one book that month. I mean, granted, I think it was during COVID, but still, like, that's pretty big for Spider-Woman.
Yeah.
And again, like, the previous Dennis Hopeless series was great. Like, it was so good.
That was really, really good. I can't, again, the switcheroo, because I was reading the final issue. I was like, if the Hobgoblin gets rid of Roger, I will be very annoyed. Because I was thinking same beats of getting Gwen kicked off the George W. Washington Bridge or whatever. I was like, that's the beat. They're going to get rid of Roger. I was like, no, don't get rid of him. Whatever. And the thing that annoys me about the new book is Roger and the baby are hardly in a damn thing. It's like, man, that's what I want in my Spider-Woman. I want Spider-Woman, I want the baby, and I want Roger. That's what I want. I get female superheroes everywhere else. I want Sorry, I'll stop ranting now.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, that's fair. Like, you know, and again, it kind of goes back to what I said previously, where you get fans of different things about characters who, I don't want to say underserved, but are, you know, not seen as frequently.
Yeah.
And you know, everyone has the particular thing that they want.
Yeah.
And that thing may or may not be there, or, you know, may turn up later, something like that. But I think there's just a lot of great characters, and I think that we're seeing how people are going to sort of turn out for these characters that they like.
Okay, that's a good challenge. I just think that, like, when I see the books come through and I see a book like Invisible Woman, a book like Black Cat, Spider-Woman, Captain Marvel, I'm excited to read these books. And yet on the flip side, you've got characters like Wonder Woman. Now, Wonder Woman's been around for decades, right? And for one point, she was the biggest lost leader in DC history, because DC used to make more money on the merchandise than they did on a comic book, right? That book, it's only just finding its feet now, you know, with Mariko Tamaki on it. And you think, hold on a second, how's this book lasted this long? And it's had such a kind of a roller coaster, and with the not very big dips, maybe, highs, but maybe dips, you know. And yet, how can DC get it so wrong when it comes to their female characters? And Marvel can get it so right, especially with Marvel, if they're using C-list characters like Mockingbird and Black Cat. You know, it just baffles my brain a little bit, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like for a lot of this stuff, it's just kind of trial and error, you know, like not everything's going to work every time, and eventually you just find the right thing that works. And again, you know, what works for some people is not going to work for others. Like, I'm a big fan of the Diana Prince white suit Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And they're just like, just take your powers away and, like, have her do basically be like the TV Avengers show. Yeah. It's like, man, this is great. I'm totally into this.
The MFL.
Yeah, basically. And, you know, it's a weird decision, and I don't know how popular it was, but it's something I really enjoyed. It's something that I always really kind of go back to when I'm thinking about Wonder Woman. Cool. So, I mean, yeah, it's, I guess, you know, some things just take longer to find their feet than others.
Cool. All right, so there's a current focus. We'll talk about women in comics, so it seems a great place to ask this question. There's a current focus on, I guess, sexuality and gender in comics, particularly how women are portrayed in comic books. How do you manage to kind of keep Felicia looking... obviously, she's sexy, she's curvy, she's flirty, she's all that. And how does that impact your writing when you come to sort of like plotting the ideas out?
It is a very distinct needle to thread, for sure. I get a lot of people bitching and moaning at me here and there that it's not sexy enough. Some guy asked a question like, why are we seeing quote reductions in bust lines? I was like, I don't know, man.
She had a whole issue where she made out with Batroc. So I mean, like, you know, it's like,
I mean, I think part of the thing is you need to be aware of what you're doing. Uh-huh. And you need to be aware that, at least from my perspective, writing a character based on titillation is, I mean, sure, you're going to have fun with it, I guess, for an issue, but you can't really base a series around it.
That's a good shout.
And if this is your headlining character, you need, especially a character that people associate so much with their sexuality, you need to be clear or make it apparent that that character is in control of that sexuality and is not there as, a booby sock puppet.
Yeah.
For people to have fun ogling, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like I said, it's a tough needle thread, but it's something that we've been very conscious of. Mm-hmm. Because we're, it's not the 90s anymore. Yeah. We're not trying to sell books on just boobs.
Yeah.
Instead, we're trying to appeal to, as many people as possible, as wide an audience as possible. And, it's 2020. A lot of that audience isn't interested in just, pure titillation comics. So, I feel like we've been relatively successful with that. But, again, we're just doing our best with it and seeing how it goes.
Well, I'm hugely biased because you know how much I love the book. So I think that's a line that you're absolutely a tightrope you're walking very, very well, because I look at that book and I see loads of different ones. And yeah, she's a sexy, flirty character, but it's not titillation to the point of, say, a Zenoscope.
Sure.
You know what I mean? That's an extreme to throw out there, but when people say titillation in comic books, you might as well just say, yeah, Zenoscope.
it's something that the character is aware of, and it's something the character is in control of.
Yeah, definitely. She uses her sexuality, she uses her flirty banter to get what she wants. Yeah, I mean, just
that's also not, her own, her only thing. I think the important trick.
It's a really good shout. Cool. All right, so the art's great on the book. The covers by J. Scott Campbell are fantastic. Issue one of the new series in December has a new cover artist.
Yep.
Who have you got? All right, and how's that different working with the new artist as opposed to working with J. Scott Campbell?
Realistically speaking, I'm not involved in the cover process at all.
Really?
So it's pretty much the same. Editorial takes care of covers. So,
really?
I get sent the cover. I say, wow, it looks great. And then that's basically the extent of my participation as far as covers go.
Did you see a cover with Juggernaut and you think, crap, Juggernaut's not in this issue. What's this cover about?
I was like, shit, I better figure this out.
Good call. Do you have a favorite issue of your room?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. Favorite issue. I feel like number 5 is one of my favorites. I really like Batroc.
Okay.
And that was an issue that I had been kind of planning for a while and hoping it would work. And I felt it came together, better than I'd hoped for.
Yeah, okay, cool.
And it came after, those issues 6, sorry. I came after 5, like, pretty high energy issues, right? You had the first issue, then the Doctor Strange heist, and then the Fantastic Four heist. Yeah. So taking that as our first opportunity to kind of cool it down a little bit, I was really pleased the way that came out.
It's very good. I've never, really thought of Batroc as a character before, but you know, I've seen way too much of him now. Thanks.
Well, there was, like, he's always been kind of a favorite, but there was, what was it? It was shortly after Bucky became Captain America, and there's a one-shot, I think it's Batroc and Captain America, that Kieran Gillen wrote. Okay. And it's all from Batroc's perspective, and it was spectacular. It was like one of my favorite modern one-shots in a long time.
Cool.
So I drew a bit on that and how, you know, how much I like the character and how I think, how I thought he was a useful and interesting character kind of put in that situation.
An interesting foil, as it were.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know you didn't ask, but the annual, I like the annual.
Oh, just, yeah, seeing, the annual was a lot of fun, too.
So just seeing Black Cat and Spider-Man interact again was fun. And I like MJ with Spider-Man. I don't think the whole MJ Spider-Man thing's working as well in Amazing Spider-Man as it has done in the past. So I'm still hoping there's going to be some kind of tension down the line for the Cat and the Spider again, I guess. But don't spoil anything. Don't say anything.
No, certainly not. The annual was a funny one because I was talking to Nick, the editor, about it. He's like, well, here's an idea that might be fine. Like, maybe do like a Spider-Man Black Hat wedding thing. I'm like, okay, yeah, that'd be cool. So I started working on it. And I was like kind of trying to put together outlines. I'm like, nah, I don't think this is going to work. I can't figure this out. I'm just going to email Nick and tell him, let's do something different. And then in my email, he's like, look, here's the cover. It's done with the wedding cover. Like, shit. Well, I guess I'm locked into that now. but no, like, you know, we pulled it off and I'm really happy with the way it came out. I had to go through a couple of rounds of outlines to get it fully zeroed in.
Yeah.
The previous version of it was a lot different.
Okay.
I was very happy with how it came out. All the artists were great on it. Joy Vasquez, Natasha Bustos, Juan Gideon. Everybody was superb in it. And Brian Delgado, of course.
Cool. Excellent. One thing I've got to ask about, and this is my own personal, smiley moment. I love the constant running gag throughout the whole thing about, man, the whole world's gone redhead.
Oh, yeah. it's a really easy joke, and I can't resist a really easy joke.
Well, the thing is, first time it's an easy joke. Now it's becoming like, you know, it's now becoming a catchphrase. Like, you're expecting it, you know. That's what she said. No, that's awesome. It's that type of line of humor. You're just expecting it. And I missed it. I think I probably missed it more than I should. And until the Tony Stark, when she's trying to get into Stark Tower. That's when I saw it. I was like, man, I'm sure is that a line I've seen before? So I'm back through. Oh, look at that. It's a running gag. And it's like, oh, get it. It's
I mean, you know, she's not wrong. It's kind of uncanny.
Well, that's Jean Grey on Uncanny, isn't it? Never mind. Black Cat's having a bit of a renaissance, isn't she? I mean, she was a big player in the Spider-Man PS4 game.
Yeah, people are very keen on that.
Yeah, and then she was in the Games Radar version of the prequel comic. Mm-hmm. And now she's got her own book from yourself as well. Do you find that that's kind of brought more eyes on your book?
I hope so. There was a while there when she was in like a fair few books. So she was in, you know, her main book. Then she was in Black Cat Strikes, the Game Reverse one. And then she's also in Symbiote Spider-Man. I think that was coming out when our series was starting. And then there was 1 month where she's in her main book. She's in Black Cat Strikes. She was in Conan, and she was in Ant-Man. So yeah, four Felicia appearances in 1 month was pretty good.
So she's got more books than Batman, right? Okay, just to make a note of that.
Well, I don't know if I go that far, but I think she's making a pretty good showing for herself, given where she was a year ago.
Cool. Have you always been a Marvel guy? You talk predominantly about Marvel characters when we talk, it just kind of occurred to me that you're more Marvel DC, or is it kind of
Generally, I grew up reading a lot more Marvel books than DC books. I had all the Marvel trading cards when I was a kid, up till the third series.
Okay.
So yeah, I think that would be fair to say.
All right,
okay. I've certainly, you know, bear no animosity to DC or anything like that. There's a lot of great books and a lot of classic work that I grew up on with DC. But I think generally Marvel, the greater output that I was raised on.
Okay. Cool. All right. Okay. Time for the final question. All right.
All right.
Come on. Give us a hint. The big heist. She's after the Infinity Gauntlet, isn't she?
I mean, you'll have to see. She's after the Thieves Guild vault right now.
But you've got tech from Fantastic Four. You've got Sorcerer Supreme stuff going on. You've got Iron Man tech. It's got to be the gems, man. I'll tell you what, if Star turns up in the next issue.
have you seen the Star number 5 variant?
I haven't seen the variant. Ooh, I'm going to have to Google. Here we go.
Star number 5 foreshadowing variant.
All right, excellent. There you go. So there's two speculator keys. Jed McKay's first book and Star number 5, the variant book. Go get it. Jed, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to take part in this. I really do appreciate it. I genuinely mean this. The book, Black Cat, puts a smile on my face every time I read it. There's never been a bad issue of it. So
that's why we do it.
I think you are, if you don't consider yourself one of the top tiers, that's fine. But then you are one of, for me, up and coming. I want to see you do Spider-Man. Let's hashtag Jed on Spider-Man. There we go. Let's get that going.
Well, I appreciate your support. I see your reviews every month. So appreciate you keeping up with the book and getting the word out there. So, and appreciate you having me on your show.
Thank you very much. All right, guys, all that's left for me to say is do not forget to check out the UCPN for all your favorite shows like No Price Podcast, which we'll talk about Black Cat, DC, the TDC, the Definitive Crusade, where we go through everything that's Batman. Sorry, I mean everything that's DC. And, of course, Flipside Focus for all your independent news. This is Johnny the Machine Hughes saying adios.
Visit UndercoverCapes.com for the latest and greatest podcasts via the Undercover Capes Podcast Network. Also visit our parent company website, ComicCrusaders.com, all about comic pop culture.